This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good evening. Welcome to tonight's shiur, Parsha Shmos. In the handout which you have in front of you, you'll see a collection of different ideas. And what we're going to do this evening is make a jigsaw puzzle. We are going to make a jigsaw puzzle, hopefully, which will end off with a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu. Not a complete picture, because we can never get the full picture. But we're going to try and understand who this personality, who this person is, where Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, is born in this week's parasha. And from now until the very end of the Chumash, he is the central character. And apart from one parasha, Parshas Tetzaveh, he will appear in every single Sedra, and he is the central player. So what I want to do this evening is look at some ideas from this week's Sedra, and around this week, but next week as well, just to understand who Moshe Rabbeinu is, and we'll try and take pieces of the jigsaw puzzle which we'll put together to get a better understanding of exactly who Moshe Rabbeinu is. So, the opening idea needs an introduction, because this idea I heard from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, Zichrei Livracha, who was a famous, legendary Anglo-Jewish Rav. His Yahrzeit, I think it's almost 30 years now, or it's just been 30 years, remarkably. And he was a famous Anglo-Jewish Rav of Kinloss here in London. He's now, amazingly, his shiurim that he gave in Nei Yisrael all those years ago, which in its day attracted hundreds of people, which was unheard of in those days. And he actually is on the All Parsha app, the OU Parsha app, and they've got fabulous speakers there. And I'm told that he is the most popular speaker on the All Parsha app, which is astonishing, given the fact that he passed away over 30 years ago. But his content is brilliant. His delivery with the Irish lilt is, I think, adds. Anyway, he gave Parsha Shir for many years in Nei Yisrael. And on this idea, he said, this is the best idea he's heard from anyone, anywhere. So coming from Rabbi Bernstein, that's quite an introduction. I hope I can do it justice. Let's read a pasuk which is very familiar to us. Towards the beginning of Parsha Shmos, in the beginning of Perek Beis, the pasuk says, and if you're listening online, please email me and I'll send you the handout, j.golker@gmail.com. Vayhi bayamim hoim. It was in those days. Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu grew up. Vayetze el Echov, and he went out to his brothers. Vayar b'siv loisom, and he saw their burdens. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri me Echov. And he saw an Egyptian smite an ish ivri, a Hebrew person, of his brothers. Vayifen kovachay, and he looked this way and that way. Vayar ki ein ish, and he saw there was no one there. There was no man there. Vayaches ha mitzri vayitmenei b'chol. So he smote the mitzri, and he buried him in the sand. Now that's the simple explanation of the pasuk. We know there is something called pardus. Pardus means, it's not just a school here, but pardus stands for pshat, remez, drush, and soid. There are different layers, different levels with which to understand chumash. So I just told you pshat, but there's actually drush, there's actually a different level of understanding this. And now let's reread the pasuk with the following understanding. Think about this. Moshe Rabbeinu had this interesting upbringing. On one hand, he was the child of Gedolim. His parents, Amram and Yocheved, were the Gedolei Hadar. Amram, his father, was the God Hadar. His mother, Yocheved, was the daughter of Levi, who was the son of Yaakov Avinu. So if you think about it, Moshe Rabbeinu was the great-grandson from his mother's side of Moshe Rabbeinu, one generation afterwards from Amram, actually. And he was therefore very miyuchas. He was born into royalty. On the other hand, he grew up to all extent and purpose as an Egyptian prince. He grew up in the palace of Paro, and he did not suffer the servitude that his fellow brothers did. So he had this very interesting dichotomy of an upbringing. On one hand, he's very Jewish. On the other hand, he's like an Egyptian prince. Now, with that in mind, let's reread the pasuk. So, as Rashi explains, Vayigdal means grew up not just physically, but emotionally and intellectually. He looked out the window of the palace and he saw his brothers and their burdens and the persecution, the shibud. That is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu himself. He saw this inner turmoil, this ish mitzri, make ish ivri, this conflict within him, this tension, am I Mitzri, am I Ivri? This conflict, he saw Vayar Ish Mitzri, Make Ish Ivri Me'ochev. Vayifen Koy V'choy, and he looked this way, he saw Mitzri, he looked that way, he saw Ivri. Vayar Ki Ein Ish, you can't live like that. Who am I? Vayach Es HaMitzri Vayit Menei V'chol, and he smote the Mitzri part of him, and he buried it in the sand. So in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu had this very strange, very unusual upbringing where he had the tension of the confusion of not knowing exactly who he was. And that came to a sort of a head in this week's parasha, in this pasuk. Vayifen koy v'choy vayar kenish. I can't live like this. Who am I? Vayach es ha-mitzri vayit meneu b'chol. He therefore smote the mitzri, and that was the beginning of the emergence, if you like, of Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's the first idea. The first piece of the jigsaw puzzle to understand who Moshe Rabbeinu was. Now the next idea is, I heard this from Rabbi Beryl Wine, and it's a very important idea. Take a look at the next pasuk. Vayigdal Hayele, this is the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the pasuk immediately before Vayibayom Mohim. Vayigdal Hayele, paragraph 2, Vatvi'ehu levas pare. So baby Moshe is 3 months old. He's put in a little basket floating down the Nile. And they retrieved him, and they brought him to Bas Paro. Vahilo leben, and she adopted him. Vatikra shemay Moshe, and she called him Moshe. Vatoimer, why Moshe? Because she said, ki min hamayim shisihu. She pulled him from the water. Says the Medrash, Yud Shemos nikrulo le Moshe. Now we know him as Moshe Rabbeinu, based on this pasuk, ki min hamayim shisihu. But the Medrash says that he actually had 10 names. Yud Shemus Nikrulo Moshe, 10 names. Yered, Chover, Yukusiel, Avigdar, Avisoiche, Avizonuach, Avtuvya Shemoi, Avshmaya Shemoi. So he had famous names. And the question, of course, is, why did the name Moshe stick? Why was he not known as Tuvya, Avigdar, Shmaya, Yukutiel, some very beautiful names? Why was he called Moshe? Why is he known to us? Why is he known to us as Moshe? Why did that name stick? Says the Sefarno, the reason why he is called Moshe, Lahiris, to teach us, Sheimalit Esachirim Hu. He is there to save others. Ki omno Meshisiu Minamayim Achashayimutal Besoicho. He was thrust into the water, and as they say, there for the grace of God go I, he was a goner, floating down the river as a 3-month-old baby. Vezel Lahoyo ki imgzeira sirin kadeshimolet tu asachirim. He was a survivor. And why did he survive? In order to save others. Now, if you think about it, a survivor sees life totally differently. Someone, Rahman al-Islam, is spared, survives a plane crash, a car accident, a fatal illness, whatever it may be. He looks at life differently. He has a survivor instinct, an attitude, just a different outlook on life. Beryl Wine says something, a very interesting anecdote. I'm not sure if you've been, but in Yad Vashem, there's a children's memorial. And you go into Yad Vashem, in this bright Jerusalem sunshine, and you go to this memorial, which sadly memorializes the 1.5 million children that died in the Holocaust. And you go in there, and it's a very dark room. And what you see in your lights, it takes a moment for your eyes to adjust to the darkness. And you go in, and you see in the darkness a solitary candle in the middle of this sort of circular walkway. And you see this one candle in the middle, but the genius of the architect has devised it in such a way that that solitary candle reflects, I think it's 1.5 million times or hundreds of thousands of times, to reflect points of light and the neshamas, Ne Hashem, Nishmas Odom, that reflecting points of these Nebuch, these children who were killed in the Shoah. And as you're going round, just acclimatizing to the darkness, seeing the hundreds of thousands of points of light, there's a recording playing with names, name after name after name. Sora Goldberg, 3 years old, Minsk. Rivka Levy, 4 years old, Warsaw. Ephraim Ginsbury, 6 years old, Lvov. And it carries on, as Beryl Wine says, until you can't take it anymore. And you go around, and then you go out to the door on the other side, and then you emerge again into the brilliant sunlight of Jerusalem. And Berenwein says, he reflecting on that experience, that he didn't hear his name. He's a man who was a child in the time of the Second World War, and he didn't hear his name. And to that extent, he says, he's also a survivor. Because if you look at the grand scale of things, you look at 6,000 years in a time scale, and the Shoah happens then, and you know, we came over to England, our grandparents, great-grandparents came over a decade before, 20 years before, or a year before, our wife's grandparents came over in 38. So, you know, it's a very close call. In the grand scheme of things, you know, we did survive. Many of our antecedents were in Eastern Europe, thereabout, the beginning of the 20th century. And therefore, a survivor, we should really see life differently. And Moshe, therefore, was called Moshe to remind him of the fact, ki min ha-mayim hashisiu, that he survived, and therefore he's got a role to play. He's got to make a difference. And therefore, every time anybody called him Moshe, whether it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vaydaba Hashem el Moshe Lemer, whether it was his parents, whether it was his siblings, his wife, his children, Klal Yisrael, he has constantly reminded that he survived, and therefore his purpose in life, his mission in life, is to help others survive, and as the Sephardim says. So that's another puzzle, if you like, another piece in the jigsaw puzzle. So number one, you see the dichotomy in Moshe Rabbeinu's life, the tension, the double life. And then, second of all, you see this survivor perspective. Now, the third answer, the third piece in the puzzle, is a fascinating Ibn Ezra. Take a look at this Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra is raising two questions. Two questions is, well, two issues. Number one, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu grow up amongst Klal Yisrael? Why did he indeed grow up in the palace of Paro? The Ibn Ezra gives two answers to this question. Ulai, says the Ibn Ezra, paragraph 3, Sivev Hashem zeh sheyigad al Moshe bebeis hamalchus, liyos nafshei al madrego ha'elyoine bederach halimut v'hargilus. It was a training ground. V'lo tiyeh shefeile v'regile liyos bebeis avodim. If he would grow up in servitude as a slave, he would have a different mentality, a different outlook, a different almost character. Halotira, see that he had this royal upbringing. Shehorak hamitzri, bavur sho osochomos. He had the confidence, the fortitude to go out and to kill the mitzri who had acted violently in persecuting this Jew. Vaheshia b'nois midjo meharoim. Moreover, he felt the justice so strongly and he had the confidence to act on it that he was able to save the Bnei Smidjon from the shepherds. Because they were strong arming their way in to feed their own flock, to give their own flock to drink ahead of these daughters, the daughters of Midjon. So says Ibn Ezra, first answer, the reason why he grew up in the palace of Paro was to give him the training of the noble, regal life that he would need to train him how to be a leader, how to deal with Paro, to give him that confidence to fight against injustice. That's all the training for that mission in life. Second of all, v'oidova acher, ki ilu hayogidl ben ochiv, had he grown up amongst his brothers, v'yakirum in Urov, and they knew him from a little kid, lo yureim imenu. They wouldn't be scared of him. They wouldn't hold him in such high esteem. They wouldn't have awe for Moshe Rabbeinu. Ki yachshavu ke'echod mehem. He's one of them. You know, it's very hard for a person growing up in a shul or in a community to go back to that shul or that community and become the rov of that community. You know, the older generation will say, I remember your Shalom Zacha. I used to babysit for you. When did God start speaking to you? So it's very hard to do that. So therefore, he had to sort of cut and paste. He had to be taken out of the picture, thrust in a different environment. And therefore, later on, he would go back, much later on, as we'll see. So two answers that Ibn Ezra gives. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu did not grow up amongst Klal Yisrael? Number one, they just wouldn't accept him. You know, like I said, I babysat for you. When did God start speaking to you? And number two, Moshe could not have a slave mentality. He had to have the royal mentality to deal with his ultimate mission in life. The Rabbi Belsky, Zichrein Levracha, I mentioned this once before here. The Rabbi Belsky, there's a fabulous biography of his. And I don't know if it was in the biography or an article that I read about him. He was Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. He was a larger-than-life character, a genius, one of the poskim of OU. a very accomplished person. And in one very telling anecdote, he says, the questioner, the interviewer must have said to him, what gave you the confidence to be the person that you became? So he said, he doesn't know, but he remembers as a child, as a baby, his mother would always sing him a song before he went to bed. Now this is Rav Belsky, if I'm not mistaken, the granddaughter of Shraga Feivel Mendelovitz. I think he is the grandson, I think. And his mother put him to bed with a song. Imagine, you say Shema with this little baby, destined to be the future Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vadas, and sang him a song. What song do you think Rabbi Belsky's mother sang him? Now, I'd probably give you 100 guesses, you wouldn't get it. But the song she sang him was, You Are My Sunshine. Right? You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. Remember that song? You are my sunshine. Now, if you hear that night after night from your mother, that fills you with the warmth, with the confidence that you can achieve anything. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. I forget the rest of the words. But you made me happy when skies are grey or blue. Well, blue. Ah, there you go. Okay, all right. So there you go. So Moshe Rabbeinu, growing up in the palace of Paro, gave him that sort of confidence, that aura that he needed. Another anecdote to sort of convey this more. There's a great book by a guy called Rabbi Joseph Telushkin. It's called Rebbe. It's all about the Lubavitcher Rebbe and about Lubavitch Hasidus. And someone bought it for me as a present some years ago. It's a very, very interesting sefer. I didn't know much about Chabad. You know, I know as much as the next person. But I read this book a couple of summers ago. And it's fabulous. Very, very interesting. It deals with the issues. And it's very well researched. It took him 5 years to write it. It's accepted by Chabad as, you know, as a genuine, as an honest sefer. And it's got some fabulous anecdotes in it. And in this book, he tells the following anecdote about Senator Joe Lieberman. I'll tell you why he says it later on. Senator Joe Lieberman, I don't know if you remember, but I think it was 2004, 2000, he became very, very close to becoming the Vice President of America. He was, in that particular election, he was very close to becoming the Vice President, which would be the most senior post for a religious Jewish person. He's a frum Jew. He would walk, much to the annoyance, I think, of the security personnel. You know, he would never be Mechal Shabbos, and it was, anyway, because when he was on the campaign trail, it was top secret where the whole delegation were going to be staying. Imagine he goes to a large city, he goes to Chicago, there are many five-star hotels, but it's top secret where this delegation are going to be staying. And only a select few knew, and they would just rock up in the particular hotel, and it was top secret. Almost every time when he went to a large city and they arrived at their hotel, there would be waiting for him in his room a meal from the local Chabad. How did they know? How did they know which hotel they decided to stay at, where he was, which room he was in? So said Rabbi Telushkin, if you at 14 or 15 years old stand on street corners and every passing person, every passing male, you say to them, excuse me, sir, are you Jewish? Did you put on tefillin today? It gives you a certain thick skin that you can weather, you know, most interactions in life. And therefore they found out. How? I don't know. So the upbringing of the royal palace is what Moshe Rabbeinu needed to fulfill his mission in life. That's piece of the puzzle number three. Now let's look at the fourth piece, which is a fascinating piece. This is, it's not so well known. You see, there are many missing years in Moshe Rabbeinu's life. I'll explain what I mean. Moshe Rabbeinu, in this week's parasha, he's born, he grows up. Vayigdal Moshe, the pasuk we started with, Vayetzei El Achiv. How old was he then? The Ramban conjectures how old he was, but he was young, a teenager. The next thing we know, he disappears from the scene, and he's 80 years at the time of the burning bush. So the time scale of this week's parasha is a full 80 years. From the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu until the burning bush later on in the parasha, 80 years. And that's when the whole story of Shibud Mitzrayim begins, or the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu's going to save Klal Yisrael. Where was Moshe Rabbeinu? What was going on from the time Moshe Rabbeinu was, let's say, we'll see in the second, the Ramban says 20 max, from the age of 20 till 80, where was Moshe Rabbeinu? What is the missing chapter? Where was he? What was he doing? So take a look at this Ramban. That's the Ramban on Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Says the Ramban, the bottom box. Moshe Rabbeinu was a fugitive. He had to run away from Paro. He fled as a youngster. That's the pasuk we just said before. When he gained intellectual, emotional development. And he was told to him that he is Jewish. Can you imagine? Vayigdal Moshe, he was told that he was Jewish. He didn't really know till then. And he went to see the burdens of his brothers, and their pressures, and all the stresses. That day he went out, he saw the injustice of this Mitzri, Makeh Ish Ivri, and he dealt with it. The next day they informed on him, and he had to run away. He was, like the Medrash says in Shemois, says the Ramban, 12 years old at that point, but not more than 20. So he was somewhere between the age of 12 and 20. And yet, when he then started sort of engaging with Paro, he was 80 years old. He was on the run, if you like, for 60 years at least. Now, there's a Yalkut Shimoni which fills in the detail. Now, listen, this is remarkable. A remarkable missing story. Says the Yalkut, the next box. Vayivrach Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu ran away, Mimitzrayim. Vayovoy el machane kuknus. Where did he run away? After the incident where he killed the Mitzri, they informed on him, he went to this place called Kuknus, which is an African country. Kuknus Melech Kush. He went to a place, the Kuknus camp, the king of Kush, which just sounds like Ethiopia. Moshe ben Shmoyna Esrei Shana Bebarchel. He was 18 years old, says the Medrash. V'hayomim asher tzor kukunus al kush teisha shonim. He was, and there was some sort of war between kukunus and kush for 9 years. V'hayabocha ho'lech bohem ohem. And Moshe Rabbeinu was a young teenager who would go and he would be with this African tribe, this African country. V'yehav ha'melech v'asorim. And he was beloved. He was very popular. The king loved him. The ministers loved him. All the army, the soldiers loved him. Kirav v'yokirhu. He was very precious. V'koymosu ke'erez. He was very tall. Uponav k'sei sashemesh. He had a glowing complexion. V'koyach gvurosu ka'ari. And he was very strong. V'hiyoyetz lemelech. And he was an advisor to the king. Now, v'hi mikeitz l'teish shonim. V'yechel ha'melech. After 9 years, the king took ill, Vayomos, and he died, Vayoshivu Aleo Es Moshe, Vayisku B'Shofaris, and they decided they're going to coronate Moshe Rabbeinu as king. And they blew the shofaris, Vayomri Chia Melech Yichach HaMelech, and they've appointed Moshe Rabbeinu as king. Moshe ben Shvayis Reishonah B'Molcho Al Pnei Kush. He was 27 years old when he became the king of Kush. Vayom Mashemolach Al Pnei Kush Aboim Shonah. So for 9 years, from age 18 until 27, he was an advisor to this African king. And then the king died. And from age 27 to 67, he was the king of Kush in Africa. Vayitzlach ma'oid b'chol milchomosoy. He was very successful in all his battles. Ki Hashem elokei avosov itzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with him. U'moyish ben sheva shonim v'sheva shonim. But say some base soiha, and he was 77 years, and he was captured. Okay, I didn't put all of it. It's a long yalkut. He was captured. He was put in prison, and then he got married, 77 years old. Vayikach tzipora hamijonis leisha vaytelech tzipora bedarchi beis Yisrael, and he married someone who was, you know, who went in the ways of the Jewish women. Vaychos rodovim mitzadeke sar rivka v'rochel v'leia. She was no less than the Imohos. And then he had children. So from the age of 77, he got married and he had his two children, Gershom and Eliezer. So there are the missing years. For 9 years, an advisor, for 40 years, a king. He was then captured in prison. A whole story. That's now. What's all that about? what is this piece of the puzzle telling us? The answer is, it's part of the training. If you're an apprentice and advisor to the king, and then you are the king for 40 years, that is the greatest training you can ever have to be the leader of the Jewish people. You're in king school, whatever you want to call it. That is leadership. So there we have, so far, four pieces to the puzzle. Number one, Moshe Rabbeinu's double life. This tension of who he was, and getting off the fence, Vayachis HaMitzri Vayat Mino Bechol. Then you have Moshe the survivor. I'm saved for a purpose, I'm driven, I'm going to fulfill my mission in life. You've then got the background, why he wasn't born, sort of grew up in the, amongst Klal Yisrael, for the two answers that the Ben Ezra gives, that he had to be sort of new and he had to earn the respect of the Jewish people. It's very hard to be accepted if you grew up amongst them. And number two, he couldn't have the slave mentality. He needed to have the regal mentality. And number four, Moshe the king of Cush. Perfect training for his mission as life as the leader of the Jewish people. Amazing. Now, in addition to that, there's time, I think, for two more pieces in the puzzle. Character traits. What middos does Moshe Rabbeinu have? Well, there are plenty. But here's a very interesting one. I heard this from Rabbi Pinchas Roberts, Zatzal. He focused on the empathy of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu was selected as leader of Klal Yisrael because of his empathy, because he was Noseh Ba'ol Im Chaveiroi. He felt the pain of Klal Yisrael. The Pasuk says, and Vayar B'Siv Loisom, says the Medrash in box paragraph number 5, Ma'u Vayar, what did he see? He saw their burdens, what did he see? Shohiroya B'Siv Loisom Uboiche. He saw their burdens and he started crying. I would rather die than I see them, you know, undergo this work and this persecution. A very difficult area of work is construction, is working with cement, with clay. And he would sort of roll up his sleeves. And he would try and help all the Jews who were being persecuted, who had to do this slave labor. He saw that the Egyptians were psychologically tormenting Klal Yisrael by giving adults children's work and children adults work, umasu ish al isha, umasu isha al ish, and men's work for women and the vice versa, umasu zokin al bochur, umasu bochur al zokin. You know, there's a scene when we go to Poland. I go every year with the boys. So there's a lot of coach drives, you know, from one town to the next. You're on the coach for a long time, which is valuable time to schmooze, to talk, and to. But on some of the trips, in sort of in preparation for the town we're going to go to, they play videos, which is relevant, you know, sort of edited videos of. So there's one film they play, and there's points that they bring out on it of, called The Pianist. It's, I think, a well-known movie. And there's one scene on this movie where the pianist, who, as the name suggests, is a sort of a very delicate, creative type of person. He has very delicate, long fingers, which I suppose are perfect for playing the piano. There's one scene where it's wet and it's muddy and it's cold and it's a building site. The war has begun. This pianist has been put in a ghetto, in a camp, and he's walking up this very slippery wooden sort of beam, carrying a big sort of amount of bricks on his shoulder. And because it's so wet and muddy and slippery and it's raining, he slips. And he slips onto this muddy floor, and the camera sort of pans in onto his hand, and you see these long, delicate fingers in like a puddle of muddy water. And that's the end of the scene. And it's a very powerful clip, because you see exactly Pshat in this Medrash. You see the inappropriateness of hard labor for this individual. That's not what he's cut out for. And aside from the physical pain, the psychological torment of not doing what you're good at or what you're cut out for is very, very hard. And therefore, that's exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu saw. And he sort of rolled up his sleeves and he started helping them. You're leaving the comfort of your palace and you're going to help your brothers. I'm going to leave the upper worlds. I'm going to speak to you. That's Pshat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw Liris. He turned away to see. He saw the Moshe Rabbeinu moved from his own palace and saw the burdens of the Jewish people. Beautiful. That is the middah that Moshe Rabbeinu had, and that was the middah he needed to lead the Jewish people. There's a story, Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer was the father-in-law of Rabbi Aaron Kotler. Rabbi Aaron Kotler's son was Rabbi Shne Kotler, who got engaged in 1940, just at the outset of the war, and because of the upheaval, the turmoil of the time, he was separated from his fiancée. He managed to get to Eretz Yisrael. She was in Shanghai, eventually made it to America after the war. He was engaged for 5 years, Shne Kotler. And he spent the war years in Eretz Yisrael with his grandfather, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, one of the Gedolei Hador. And in 1945, the war had finished. He was ready to go back to America to get married. And he had spent the war years learning in Hebron with his grandfather and other places. And he had a very close relationship with his grandfather, but his grandfather was a very old man, was unable to take the journey going in 1945 from Eretz Yisrael to America. It was too much for him. So he came to, when the taxi was outside waiting to take him to the airport or the port, however he got there, he went to say goodbye to his Zayda. And his grandfather embraced him, gave him bracha, and he was going to walk him out to the taxi, but he actually walked him to the front of his house, to the apartment building, and then he said goodbye there and walked back inside. And afterwards, the Talmidim said to him, why didn't you walk him to the car? I can't stand, you can't go to America. But to the car, why didn't you walk him? So he said, how could I stand in public in the middle of a street and embrace my grandson in 1945? And my grandson has survived the war. He's going back to America to get married. I could stand there when so many of my neighbors and friends have lost children and grandchildren? That's noisiv olam chaveri. That's empathy. That was one of the middos Moshe Rabbeinu had and needed to lead the Jewish people. That's number five. And the final piece, and again, there are many, and we're only sort of painting a snapshot of Moshe Rabbeinu, but we're beginning to build a picture of who Moshe Rabbeinu was. All these composite parts create a bigger picture to understand better who he was. The last one is his humility. And this is fascinating. The Pasuk says, this is in next week's parsha, the Pasuk says that when Moshe Rabbeinu went to try and persuade Klal Yisrael to go, the Pasuk says, V'lo shamu el Moshe mekoytze ruach ha-mi'avodah kasha. The Bnei Yisrael, they didn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu because they were exasperated. They were suffering persecution. V'lo shamu el Moshe, they didn't listen to Moshe, mekoytze ruach, they were short of breath, ha-mi'avodah kasha. That continues the Pasuk. V'aydabe Hashem el Moshe leim, v'bo yidabe el paro melech Mitzrayim. Go tell Paro v'yishalach esmei Yisrael me'aretz, etc. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, what? V'aydabe Moshe lefnei Hashem lemer, in one of the 10 Kal V'chumers in the Torah, hein b'nei Yisrael l'shomu elai, if the b'nei Yisrael didn't listen to me, and they've got a vested interest to go, ve'eich yishmo'eini Paro, so how on earth is Paro going to listen? He wants Klal Yisrael to stay. V'ani aras v'sayim. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how, if Bnei Yisrael, who are being persecuted, they're not listening to me, then Kal V'chomer, how much more so, Paro is not going to be interested in listening to me. V'ani aras v'sayim, I'm a bad orator, I've got a speech impediment, I can't speak, there's no way Paro is going to listen to me. That's Moshe Rabbeinu's famous Kal V'chomer. Now, the trouble is that the Kal V'chomer, everyone comments on this, has got an obvious pircha, has got an obvious flaw. What's the flaw? The reason why Bnei Yisrael were not listening to Moshe Rabbeinu is the Pasuk says, Mikoytze ruach mi'avodah kasha, because they didn't have the headspace, they didn't have the breath, they didn't have the equanimity to sit down and to think and to understand what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. They're being persecuted, they haven't got time to breathe. So, but Paro, on the other hand, who's sitting in the peace and serenity of his palace, maybe he would actually listen to him. So what does it mean? The Pasuk says, "Me'avodah kasha, me'kaitz ruach me'avodah kasha." That's why the Bnei Yisrael didn't listen. So there's an obvious flaw to the Kal V'chomer. Different answers are given, but one answer is the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu. How so? And the Pasuk, of course, says that. Anav mikol adam. Imagine the following scenario. You know, you have a teacher who's applied to join the school, and we're having a trial lesson. So, or even a teacher, you know, a new teacher is in the school, he comes into the staff room. That was a disaster, that lesson. It happens. Now there's two ways that they could express that. One way is that lesson was a disaster. These kids are impossible, they're unteachable, they're unruly. It would never happen in Hasmonean. But these kids are impossible. Right? That's one way of dealing with it. The other way is he'd come back into the staff room, he or she, and would say, that was a disaster lesson. I need to brush up my teaching. I need to think of different ways to engage the kids better. What ATAs do you have? What techniques are you using? What management techniques can you use in the classroom, etc., etc.? What's the difference between the two? The difference is the first is somewhat arrogant. The second is more humble. Because the first one, really, they're saying, I'm a great teacher. It's just that these kids are unteachable. The second way is saying, look, maybe I'm a good teacher, but I'm just not engaging these kids. I need assistance from other people who've got experience to try and engage them better. Now let's understand the Kal Vachomer again. B'nei Yisrael not listening to me, so how is Paro going to listen? Says Moshe Rabbeinu, v'ani aras v'asayim. He was blaming himself. I'm not convincing, I'm not persuasive, I'm not a good orator, I've got speech impediment, ani aras v'asayim. He put the blame on himself. But the truth is, you're not the problem, Moshe Rabbeinu. The real problem is, they haven't got the headspace to listen to him. That's the problem. But Moshe Rabbeinu, like a very humble person, assumed the problem was not them, but him. So you see, this is the sixth ingredient, as it were, to create this big composite picture that is the making of Moshe Rabbeinu. Let's just chazal the six ideas, and that will give us a better picture of who this central personality of the entire Torah really is. Number one, we said Moshe Rabbeinu's double life. He grew up as a Mitzri, he grew up as an Ivri. Vayar ish Mitzri maka ish Ivri, there was this tension. Vayifin koi v'choi vayar ki einish. Vayach is a Mitzri v'yitmenei b'chol. An amazing thing. Number two, Moshe the survivor. Ki min amayim eshisi, of all the beautiful names he had, he's constantly reminded, Moshe, 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 because you have been saved for a purpose, and therefore you're driven to fulfill your mission in life. Number three, Moshe Rabbeinu's background, he had to grow up in the palace of Paro, largely, says Ibn Ezra, to give him that royal mentality that he needed to give him the confidence to deal with his life's mission. Number four, he was the king of Kush. Amazingly, he was the advisor for 9 years and then the king for 40 years. Perfect royal training for his mission. And he had the empathy and humility that he needed for a good leader. I think what is important that emerges from all of this is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the life circumstances, the tools, the abilities, the skill sets, the everything to fulfill our mission in life. Whatever that happens to be. How the eye color we have, the intellect we have, the parents we have, the circumstances we have, the era in which we're born, everything, the tools, the abilities, the capabilities, we are perfectly created on a very tailor-made individual basis to help us paint our masterpiece and fulfill our mission in life. And you see it very clearly from Moshe Rabbeinu. And sometimes we don't ask for exactly this particular ability or this particular situation. But at the end of the day, they're all carefully chosen for us to help us fulfill our potential and to paint our masterpiece. You see it very clearly with Moshe Rabbeinu. And I think that's a very important message that emerges from this week's parasha and from the whole analysis of the personality of Moshe Rabbeinu.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.